morning. It is 9 o'clock. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The clerk circulated the minutes from our January 3rd, 2023 meeting. Were there any additions, corrections, or substitutions?
No. I make a motion we pass the minutes as published.
I'll second.
There is a motion and a second to approve the January 3rd, 2023 minutes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, Madam Clerk, it looks as though it is the time to renew the annual liquor licenses, so we will convene a public hearing for renewal of the liquor licenses. Madam Clerk, have all fees been paid? Is all paperwork in order?
No, sir. Chairman, there are two liquor licenses that I'd like for us to hold back and reconsider at our next meeting. The paperwork for the TA Guest Ranch was not quite in order. I did get it submitted yesterday, but I haven't gotten an approval back from the state that they've accepted it. And the other liquor license is the Moose Lodge. The state has asked for a copy of their food permit, and we have not gotten that, or excuse me, not their food permit, their lease. And last that I spoke with them, their lease has gone up $500 a month, and so they may not be able to stay in business. And so I've tried to reach her again for an update, and I haven't been able to. But the others are all in order.
Madam Clerk, it looks like we have a retail liquor license for the Cattle Guard Steakhouse, LLC, for EST LLC, which is this Folded Hills?
Yes.
Okay, for Folded Hills. For the Good to Go Stores, for the HF Bar Ranch, for the Lake Stop LLC, and MC Harper LLC, which is the Cowboy, Paradise Guest Ranch, South Fork Mountain Resort. Are there any additional licenses for us to consider at this time?
No, that's true.
Okay. With that, I would open it up for public comment on any of the liquor licenses that are up for renewal. Is there any public comment or objection to renewal of the licenses that were mentioned? Last call for public comment. Hearing no public comment, I'm going to go ahead and close public comment and close the public hearing on that. Commissioners, what's your pleasure on the renewal of the liquor licenses for Cattle Guard, Folded Hills, Good to Go Stores, HF Bar, Lake Stop, Cowboy Saloon, Paradise Guest Ranch, and South Fork Mountain Lodge?
Make the motion to approve.
Second.
There's a motion and a second to approve the liquor licenses. Commissioners, any further discussion on that?
No.
Hearing none. All those in favor of renewing the liquor licenses, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Ruby, these licenses go into effect in March. Assuming that the two businesses in question that did not have their licenses renewed today are able to meet their paperwork, would there be any issue with us then issuing those at a later date? They're not going to run into a situation where they lapse unless they fail to meet the March deadline. Is that correct?
Correct. That's my understanding, yes.
And in the event that those businesses were unable or unwilling to complete the appropriate paperwork, what would be the next action from the County.
Well, I think those licenses would revert back to us, and we would have the ability to issue them to other entities that would request them if we would like, or at least offer them for license to other entities, if that was the process that the county decided they wanted to go. And I can check into the specifics of how that would work, but I don't think there's actually a lot to do for us. It sort of does itself by operation of law, if I remember correctly.
Commissioners, any questions for the county attorney's office on renewal of those two outstanding licenses?
Nothing for me.
Okay. All right. Madam Clerk, I will get those signed for you today and get those out and issued.
Thank
you. All right. Looks like the first item on the agenda after that is the Child Development Center to give an update. So I'd like to welcome up Marcia Riley, their executive director.
Thank you, Commissioner Spencer, Mr. Chairman. I'll just be brief and let you know it's been so long since I've been here, so I wanted to make sure that I reminded you about the Child Development Center and the work that we do in Johnson County. So we are a nonprofit, and we contract with the Wyoming Department of Health. It's a contract that is an annual, biannual contract on a per child served funding process. So as a nonprofit, we have 7 board members, our local who serve, volunteer board members who serve 3-year terms. Our local Johnson County board member is Jen Sieves Hicks at this time. We are one of 14 regions. So in the state of Wyoming, it was in the late 70s that the state of Wyoming made a commitment to fund early intervention for children ages birth through 5. So that's what we do. We do early intervention for children ages birth through 5 who have developmental delays and developmental disabilities. We partner with a lot of agencies in Johnson County. We partner with the school district. We partner with healthcare. We partner with other social agencies. So those collaborations are really important to us, and we really appreciate the friendships and things that we find in Johnson County. We do, you've probably heard mostly about us from our free developmental screening. So all children need a developmental screening. We tell parents come back more than once. You can call our office and you get to talk to a real person. So we're a pretty people-intensive operation. Our therapists, our special educators, our case managers, our early interventionists are all working directly with children in Sheridan and Johnson counties. And so our pre-developmental screenings are really important, and we want to ask everyone to encourage people to do that. We like to ask people to help us also advocate for people with developmental delays because I think we've come a really long way, and early intervention is important to children's growth and to the well-being of the family. And certainly the work that we do brings about positive outcomes for children and their families. I wanted to give you an opportunity to ask me any questions if you'd like, because sometimes I know it's hard when people want to tell you all about their agency and then not answer any of your questions. So we do work. I'll tell you that KC is an area where we work, and we are working with them now to try to find, in our program, the infant and toddler program is a home-based program. So our therapists go into families' homes and help them there. But our preschool program, 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds do attend preschool alongside typically developing children. And so in Johnson County, we've been working with the library in order to find a place for children with developmental delays to sort of gather with other children so that they can learn from those other children's growth and development. And so because at this time, you know, there's really not a lot of childcare, preschool, daycare for children to gather together. So it's been great to work with the library and try to do that. What questions might you have for me?
I guess the first question I have, remind us again, your entity is associated with the building over by the YMCA and walk through. That
yes.
works and kind of really give us a status of what's going on there.
Yes.
I know there's a lot of questions in the community about that.
Yes. So that building, I brought the paperwork from that. So it is the building has been there since 2010. So it came about through a lease with the city. So I see that the paperwork started about in 2007 with your mayor Andy Anderson. So about in 2007, the Johnson County determined that they had a study that there was a growing need and lots of families were moving in, younger families, and the population was growing. And so we are on that lease property there on that corner of 1 North de Smet across from the YMCA. And we have a new lease with the city on that.
And is the office open? Are you seeing
kids
there?
Oh, yeah.
What services are you providing out of there?
Sure. We have actually 4 local employees that work in that building. And so the services that we provide in our building, we no longer have a preschool inside the building. It was difficult to compete for children because you have such, in Buffalo, you have some really great preschool opportunities. So the children that we serve now that are 3 or 4 or 5 years old that have a disability, they are in those other agencies. So we do developmental screenings there. Families do bring their children in for screenings. Families do bring their children in for therapy sometimes. If they live in these outlying communities and don't want home service, then they oftentimes are in Buffalo and we see them there. And so the services we provide are special education, speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, vision therapy. If a child is hard of hearing, we also have hearing specialists and mobility specialists. If a child has a vision issue, a mobility specialist that help them sometimes learn Braille or learn how to use a cane. Yes, so those are the things we do. We're funded, as I said, on a per child serve. It's about $8,900 a year for the children that we serve. In Johnson County, on an annual basis, we serve about 40 children. On an annual basis, children come in and they go out. Oftentimes, infants and toddlers come in, qualify for our services, but then before they're 3, sometimes roll off of those services and don't move into the preschool program. Okay. So as I said, I haven't been here for a while. We haven't applied for any 1 cent, and I noticed that in today's shared media that I think it was you, Chairman Novotny, that talked about the deadline for the 1 cent. So I think we'll submit an application this year. You helped us in 2017 buy some hearing equipment because in our developmental screenings, we do vision screening, so we have some equipment that's a little bit costly. We do hearing screenings. We have some equipment that's a little bit costly. You helped us replace some of that, and then the next year, you helped us purchase a car for that our employees, our staff drives a car around or their own vehicles. So thank you very much. I thank you for the work that you do, and thank you for supporting us because it really is like people on the front line is really what child development centers are all about. Thank you.
Thanks. Next agenda item, we're going to receive a quarterly update on our health insurance benefits. Are they calling in today or are they coming over from?
They were coming over from Shining Lake and I have not had an update from them.
I know that Diana is actually in Cheyenne working on the pharmacy benefit plan legislation. I think it was just going to be Ryan. Sometimes he calls in, sometimes he presents to the Sheridan commissioners first and then comes down or vice versa. So we'll just go ahead and roll on with our agenda. And then when we see Ryan or we get a call, we'll go ahead and backtrack on that. So I do see Jody Sowers is here. She's going to give the update on JCTA.
Nice. Copies for everybody.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
So the first thing that I wanted to kind of go over and cover, and there's 3 different forms there, is I just got back from the Wyoming Governor's Conference. Sorry, I think that's my phone. I thought I had it turned off. Anyway, I wanted to give you an update on some of the highlights. Some highlights and takeaways from the Governor's Conference. It was the first time that I attended the conference. I've just been with the Johnson County Tourism Board since September. And so it was an awesome conference. The roads down, not so much. Probably the worst roads I've ever been on. but it was a great conference. So some of the takeaways, there was a gentleman, Jay, from Zardico, and one of his quotes that really hit home is, tourism exists for our residents to improve their quality of life. You know, we all seem to think that tourism is all about the tourists, but what we really are is, by bringing tourism into our market, eating at the restaurant, shopping at our shops, enjoying our mountains, it helps benefit our community and our residents. So I think we all need to keep that in mind. The other thing he talked about was cultivating quality and not quantity. So, you know, we don't need 10,000 people coming in at once. We need, you know, to make that experience something that they're really going to enjoy and hopefully come back year after year. And then he talked about working smart, being focused, compelling, differentiate, and placemaking with our message that's out there. One of the things that in doing that, and I'm going to kind of jump around all over the place, if you look down at the generational marketing, it talked about, you know, the boomers, my age group, the Gen X, the millennials, and Gen Z, and how we target those and how we focus our advertising campaigns and marketing campaigns on those really need to be different. You know, the Gen Z person is really looking to make the world a better place. They're even past sustainable travel. They're more into regenerative travel. So they like programs that, you know, plant trees or restock fish or something like that. So as a group, we're going to be really changing up some of our marketing and going towards that. Kyle wanted to fill you in on what Wyoming Office of Tourism's campaigns are. They have a current winter one, which is, you know, winter in Wyoming. Starting in February, they have a hospitality campaign that you may see, and it's inspiring career choices, so it's totally targeted towards our youth, our high school and college people. I included a website so you can kind of see what their work in Wyoming. That's where they're targeting those kids. We're trying to keep our youngsters in the communities. Starting in March, it'll start the summer campaign, and that's a Modern Explorers. They are focusing on Wyoming residents that have made a difference or kind of stepped out of side of the box. So they have Jimmy Chin, which is a Wyoming filmmaker and an outdoor adventurer. Jess Oldman is with the Wild Mustang Sanctuary. Tim Trites with the Cowboy Distilling in Pinedale. And then Taylor Thoman with the Thoman Ranch. And then they're also in the works to partner with Ford with a Bronco Wild Fun. So it'll be interesting to see what that has. But it was interesting, you know, to really see all the different programs that they're working with. Met with the Berkeley group, or Berkeley with Young Strategies out of, I think he was South Carolina. He actually was the one that came in and worked with us on our strategic plan that was done in 2021. So it was good to meet with him and kind of go over some of that stuff. But he said, he had a seminar, and he said, one of the things is everybody wants to know an outlaw, and we know we're filled with those. So we need to really work on our history for our area and getting that word out to the people that we want to come and visit us. Focus on things that make Buffalo unique, our mountains, trails, the Clear Creek itself, the wool mill. And then one of the things that I'm hoping to get done is to query our community as to what the community knows was the first thing that happened, or the first whatever, the best, the most, and the only. Because he said every community has those hidden gems about things that we don't know about, and those are always good marketing opportunities to bring visitors in. Any questions on the on that? It was a great conference. I think everybody should attend. Learned a lot, met lots of people. Think that went really well. And then the second thing, and I sent you guys the 1% requests for taking care of the visitor center, the summer one out towards 90. And we totally appreciate your support with that. There was money left both with the city and the county with that. And I've been approached by the chamber to see if there's any way we could use that leftover funds to help them fund the downtown tourism office until the 1st of July to get their two part-time employees on either more hours or a full-time basis. But I think we had $8,000 left with you guys, and I think there was another two left with the city. And so I wanted to see if you guys would be open into letting us work with the chamber to get their people to have maybe their offices open longer, or to get their part-time people a few more hours in April, May, June as we ramp up into the tourism season.
So, Jody, any time that a previous award has been given and then the organization wants to reallocate those funds, there needs to be a letter of request from that entity that outlines exactly how those funds are going to be spent down to the penny, because we've got to have documentation in our files that meets the threshold that will please the auditors that the allocated funds are going to the general area that they were initially approved for. So the sooner you can get us that, the better, because obviously we're going into the 1% season,
right,
where the committee will be meeting. You know, we'll take a look at outstanding balances. Some of that money that is clearly not going to be spent may be swept so that it can be reallocated. So the sooner you can get us a breakdown of exactly how much you're requesting and what you're going to use those dollars for, then we can consider those. But it's not uncommon that we do allow those entities to reallocate those funds.
Okay. I'll get with Jen then at the chamber and see if she can give me some specifics. We had just talked in kind of general terms, and so I just thought I'd present that to you. And then the last thing that I wanted to just share with you, because I don't know how long ago you've had an updated just a chart of the board and who's on there currently. And, you know, we do have some people that are interested in stepping up and joining the board. Harold Anton with through the city has indicated that he does wish to step down. I haven't gotten a letter from him, so I don't know exactly where we stand on that. And then I talked with Cole last week. He didn't realize that he needed to send in a letter about re-upping with you guys at the county, and he said that he would take care of that last week. I don't know if you guys got anything in from him or not. Okay. Because I gave him your email on that. So
if he did email me, he could please have him call me.
Yeah.
I always respond to people when they send in a letter.
Okay. Any questions that I can answer for any of you guys?
I don't know.
There's maybe an accounting issue that that Chandra needs to check on, and I can go over that with her. contract employee can't only work for one person, and a lot of these people are retired people, and that's the only job that they actually hold, so they don't really qualify as a for 1099.
Okay.
Designation, and we're actually by 1099, and they are having to pay their own. They're part of the Social Security and all the taxes that go along with self-employment. So, we need to change the way they're paid as well.
Okay. So do they become employees of the chamber?
No, they become employees. You're paying them, so I suppose they're your employees.
Okay.
You know, it's not
because we took that over,
and it'll cost a little bit more, but not.
Okay. Yeah, because I wasn't involved in when they took that over, so because I know some of the stuff Jen paid at the chamber, and then we reimbursed her. But I think we paid them directly.
Yeah, you paid them directly. Okay. I talked to Chandra about it. And at the time, I wasn't sure whether they should be 1099 or considered employees. Since then, I've talked to accountants, and they said that they don't qualify as a 1099 contractor.
Okay. Well, I need to call Chandra about something else, so I'll follow up with her today on that. So. Any other questions?
Mr. Shelley, any questions for the Tourism Association?
I do not.
All right. Thanks, Joey.
Thank you so much.
All right. I'd like to welcome up, and they're both here. So our good friends from NOVA to walk through a quarterly update on our health insurance and the prescription benefits that we offer to our employees. So good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. How are you all doing?
Be down Cheyenne working on legislation.
I know. Well, it seems like that's all I've been doing lately, to be fair. It feels nice to see humans.
So, why don't we dive in and talk a little bit about the legislation first and foremost, and then we'll run through a little bit of the program, the plan, how it's running so far this year, and talk about how things are looking just from a broad brush perspective moving forward. So
I'm hoping that we're in the middle on the PBM bill of finding some middle ground. And the middle ground means that we've divided everybody, not always in the most gentle way. But the whole thing is so darn complex. And the Senate Bill 151 has a clause in there that would force us to take specialty medication and be able to purchase some local, which 99% of all specialty med is actually managed through specialty pharmacies. And we use coupon programs. We're in the process of, and our goal on 7-1 is to overlay an alternative funding on top of your PBM side on your own health care plan, and that would saves you guys a considerable amount of money if we can do that. And House Bill 151 would eliminate our ability to do any of that, because the language would control how we steer an employee from one vendor to the next. And keep in mind that we're not talking about making everybody do mail order, because that isn't the case. That the state made a decision to do mail order on their maintenance meds, and oh my gosh, they're 49% of all their meds are going out of state now, which hasn't helped our cause in the middle of this. I think we're going to find some common ground where none of us win, and hopefully we get to put a little bit of capitalism back in the marketplace and untie the hands of our pharmacies to be able to purchase through the lowest cost denominator, and then require the PBM, the pharmacy benefit manager, to notify a pharmacy if they find a better alternative, an equal prescription for a lower cost. So as this ferrets out this week, I know today part of the bill language has not been correctly updated, but by the time we hit tomorrow, we should be able to start to get all the language implemented in there. And then our goal is to clean that up on the channel side of it without losing control of the employers to make a difference in their health care plan, like what we're doing with you guys. So I have hopes that we might be able to do that and prevent the House Bill 191 from being brought back up in another session, because that would be catastrophic for us financially. So we're still in the middle of negotiations. None of us are going to be happy, but at least we don't lose. So,
Diane, just especially because we have a new clerk and a new commissioner, do you want to just kind of give them a top line about how much it would cost the county if this were to be enacted?
Yeah. So off the top of my head, I apologize, I don't remember for sure. I think you guys were somewhere around $159,000 on the Bill 151. If 191 happened to have gone through, then that number could increase exponentially. And we're really fighting over little tiny, I want to say turf wars, because that's what it is, where the PBMs want to control a lot more inside the pharma plan than we want them to have. And you hear the number one thing they're talking about is spread pricing. We don't, Blue Cross doesn't do that. We've never allowed one of our groups to be boxed into spread pricing anyway. And that would be where the PBM got to pocket the difference inside of it, and the pharmacy ended up paying what that difference was, or the healthcare plan did. And we fought through the middle of all of that. So in through the portion of the bills, we're trying to go in and get the contracts cleaned up. There are technically three different funding models of PBMs. And one is a traditional model in which they don't care where you spend. They just buy, the contract is designed with the PBM to tell everybody to get everything you want, spend all the money you want, and the more we buy, the less we pay for it. Sounds really good, but all the rebates hold back into the PBM and we don't get any of that. And right now you guys get all of them. So there's some real fundamentals in how that model is built. And then the second model is called a hybrid model. And then the third model is a more traditional pass-through contract. And that's what we've had you guys in from the time that we picked you up, moved you into a pass-through model where the rebates are yours, we pay an admin fee, and then we want to be able to control the plan design so that it makes the most sense and we can get the most affordable medication that is has a high efficiency level back into the employees, because you're an employer-sponsored plan. We need to keep the employees healthy, and that's the whole goal of it. So as we go through the process of keeping to sort through this, what the state is really trying to build is a model that we've been doing for 15 years. And we're just trying to go, okay, if we're going to clean it up and do that, then we're trying to get the state to give us enough parameters to build fences between where the PBMs play, the PSAOs play, the wholesalers play, so that the only entity that has the worst representation is the pharmacy side, and we don't make a decision that tightens the belt so much we sink them. Campbell County lost two more independents in the last 8 weeks. And it's tough. It is tough. And the more that we tighten the belt up on that, the harder it's going to be for the independents to stay in business. And the crazy part is the smaller chain pharmacies are struggling with the same problem. So a lot of those chain pharmacies are essentially designed to bring us into the grocery store to buy groceries. And if it's a loss leader for them to manage the pharmacy, they make enough on the food side of it that it's making it profitable for them. But still, through the course of it, PSAOs are getting a little bit bigger, PBMs are getting a lot bigger, and we need to readjust how that settles out economically and how much revenue they're allowed to keep.
So before they dive into the numbers, questions on PBMs and what's going on in the legislature right now from anybody?
No.
Let's dive right in then, how the plan's doing and where we're at in terms of costs.
Sounds great. Okay. What I would like to do, first of all, there's some reports up front. I am going to cherry pick some of the data that we go through. Obviously, this is a thick packet, so we're not going to hit everything here. But I think first and foremost, it's important to run through both your specific performance and your aggregate performance. And your specific performance, for those who are new here, includes any of the larger claimants, anybody who's within about 50% of that $35,000 cap on each employee. So any of the larger claimants. So if you look at, if you go in on that very first page, we have six individuals, as you can see, who are listed on that specific report. And of those six individuals, we have one individual who has exceeded their cap to the tune of about $6,000. The second individual listed, you can see, is lasered. As a laser, as we've talked about in the past, of 70,000.
For the benefit of these,
yes.
I want to explain what the
yep.
laser is.
Perfect.
It's an interesting concept.
The laser is, so each year when we go into the underwriting process with the markets, we put you guys out to bid with about 32, 33 different markets out there and shop you guys and work the numbers off of each other. Now, there are a couple of options that we can do. We can say, hey, if there are higher claims situations that are ongoing that everybody is aware of, for example, if there were to be a large cancer situation or something to that tune that was going to be ongoing in nature, if you were fully insured, they would just bake that into your premium. If you're self-funded, it's an option to bake that into your premium, or the preferred method from our perspective is break that out into a separate risk component. And they call that a laser because you're kind of targeting, you're lasering one specific individual and saying, okay, the group is going to have a specific cap on each belly button within the group of $35,000. But that one individual, because we're aware of what's going on there and insurance insures against the unknown, against risk, we're aware of that risk. We're going to laser that, in this example, at $70,000, that individual. So in this case, with this situation, that's a medication. It's a known cost. It's a known quantity. In fact, if you look at the data, this is through December, and where are you at as a percentage of the laser? You're about halfway there, right? So they know that that medication at the end of the year is going to cost at about $70,000. And that's how that runs. Now, our preference to do a laser versus to bake it into the premium is when it's a medication issue, that's one thing. You pretty much know what the cost is going to be and you roll forward. But on a lot of these situations, the markets, obviously, they get a little gun shy. They try to create some padding to their risk on their end. So our preference is to say, hey, you know what? Let's break that out into separate risk. Most of the time, those individuals are either going to get better or, you know, unfortunately, in a few cases here and there, the opposite happens, but rarely is it an ongoing year after year after year type of situation. So let's break that out into a laser rather than bake that into the premium so that that goes away in subsequent years. It's just a more efficient way of doing it. About 6 or 7 out of 10 times, we see that we win by breaking that out as a separate risk rather than baking it in to the premium overall. So, okay, so that is that. You can see we do have some other individuals listed. This report includes anybody over $17,500, and we have four other individuals who are in that threshold or in that realm. What I would say is, and we'll cover the aggregate data here in just a minute, overall, we did have a higher claims month in December. Up until that point, your claims are actually running quite well. So we are going to continue to keep tabs on how things are going and running for the year as we roll forward. Just as an illustration, once again, I won't spend too much time on this, but do you see the other specific report as you move forward a couple of pages here? There's a report that includes the data from 2019 through 2020, and you can see that list is much more extensive. So clearly, we still have 6 months in the process, but it's nice to see that your list is currently as short as it is 6 months into the plan year. That's a positive thing so far. So if you go a couple more pages in, and on the upper left-hand side, it says aggregate stop-loss report for December of 2022. Does everyone see that?
What page is that?
Well, it Commissioner Perry, it says one or two, one or two, but there are a numerous one or twos.
Just like that.
Everybody there? Okay. Okay, so this is what I was talking about. If you look at July in the little box there, July through December claims, overall running really well, and then we had a pickup of significance in December. And the majority of that pickup is on one or two individuals. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But overall, if you take your claims and compare that to the attachment point, and let me pause for a sec. So you have two coverages right now in place. We talked about the specific, right? The cap of 35,000 on each belly button. And then you have your aggregate coverage. And that's really kind of an umbrella policy over the entire group. So let's say you didn't have a ton of really high, a few high catastrophic claimants, but you had a ton of people that incurred kind of mid-range dollar claims, and it added up to a certain amount. We've put a protective cap in for you in that situation where if you were running, you know, close to 100%, over 100% of your attachment point, which did happen 1 year, I believe. I think it was 3 years ago or so. It's very rare for that to happen. It can happen. And if that were to happen, then the carrier reimburses you on that as well. So two protective mechanisms, one from a group threshold, one from an individual threshold to help out the plan. But overall, this year, you're running quite well. Year to date, you're at 69. If you look at that bottom percentage, right down in the middle of the page there, at the very bottom, 69.29%. of your attachment point, of your ag factors. And when the carrier sets those rates, they anticipate that you're going to run closer to 75 to 80% of that. So anything below that is going to be viewed positively and favorably by the markets. So once again, so far so good. Good news there. Okay, let's move into the account-specific reporting and just talk through overall claims and how things are going. From a membership perspective, if everybody sees the Johnson County Employees Paid Summary, from a membership perspective, you can see your percentage change is very slight. Average number of contracts are up just 5%. Average number of members, or belly buttons, we should say, are 2%. 2% increase over the prior period, which was last year at this point in time. Your institutional claims, which are your hospital claims, are all down. In some cases, you know, fairly significantly. Your professional services, the volume of services is down ever so slightly. The charges are down ever so slightly. The mix, kind of the cocktail there, which equates to the payments, are up a little bit. You're up 7% overall there. You can see prior period, 182,000. Current period, 195,000. And then your prescription drugs as well. Your cocktail of claims are up a little bit. The good news, I would say, is we don't have any. We do have specialty drugs. And the specialty drugs, whenever I refer to those, are the highest cost drugs that are out there. But we don't have any catastrophic specialty drugs right now. So we do have some specialty drugs in the mix, but we're not talking about million-dollar drugs that that are becoming more and more prevalent in the mix over time. And that's, to Diana's point, one of the reasons why we've been so involved in the bills that are on the table, because they could, you know, preclude some of the options potentially that we bring to the table to drive savings on that front. But right now you're not in a position where that is a factor or an issue. And if you look at overall from a per contract per month and per member per month, you're down from last year It's a nice thing to see, and probably somewhat rare thing to see with insurance. You're down 23% to 25% in your expenditures. So, any questions so far on this page? Okay. Employee cost savings. I'm not going to spend too much time on that, but you can see on the cost saving detail down below in that lower section, your discounts prior period were $437,000, current period $440,000. Excuse me, your coordination of benefits went from $77,000 to $164,000, so that is when alternate insurances and coverages are available that they're being coordinated and taken advantage of there. And then you can see deductible, coinsurance, and copay, the breakout there from prior period to the current period. The next page is your enrollment summary. Once again, I'm not going to spend really any time on that because your enrollment has been relatively flat. You've bumped up a couple of percentage points there. A catastrophic claim listing. So you have four individuals who are listed in this segment, in this section. And you can see that right at the top, there is a cancer situation with a tumor. And you can see what the associated payments have been on that, $47,936. The next two costs are prescription drug costs, Otezla and Humira, and then an organ disorder. Kind of rounds out the bottom there. It does not look, I guess the positive news on the organ situation, it does not look like that is a situation that could go into dialysis or anything along those lines. So we'll continue to track that and watch what that accounts for. Now, one other thing I would tell you is with these insurance policies, we always, internally, we always talk about kind of the 80-20 rule, and sometimes it's the 90-10 rule. And it just is stating that you will always have, no matter what given year, just a few claimants that account for the majority of claims, or for many of the claims, or a significant percentage of the claims. And that's going to be a rolling, you know, system from year to year with different individuals. But you can see here, for example, just taking these four individuals, account for 31% of the claims year to date. And that's pretty typical. Pretty typical to see that. Institutional types of services. I don't think we are going to go into the weeds on this, but you can see overall, from an institutional perspective, your payments are down 53%, which is indicative of everything that we've seen so far. Overall, the group is running pretty well, running at 69%. We don't have a lot of major ongoing conditions or cases that would account for hospitalization related conditions. So, any questions on that? Okay. You can see here we are looking into one of these items on the next page, institutional inpatient breakdown by DRG. So you can see a couple of these situations that are going on, and a few payments that have actually been backed out. Portions of the charges that have been backed out. So we're working with Blue Cross on that, but that's, once again, a positive thing to see those backed out rather than moving forward from a cost perspective. So more information to come on that. The outpatient breakdown on the next page, institutional outpatient breakdown by diagnosis, is just running through a pretty extensive list of conditions and what is going on, the associated charges and payments with that. And nothing, once again, that stood out there or was different that we should kind of walk through from what we've been discussing so far. The next page gives your top institutional providers, and you can see Sheridan Memorial Hospital is right there at the top, and then Johnson County Memorial Hospital, and then it runs down from there as far as charges. Pretty significantly less. Wyoming Medical Center would be number three in line as far as charges go, but significant discounts on that. Only $4,000 was paid out. Occasionally, so a couple of other things I'd note just from an I guess from an interest perspective. Occasionally, you will see items billed out of different states or different cities, and that can be one of two things. That can be either a situation where somebody was down there on vacation or something to that effect, or it can be as simple as the parent company just billing out of their parent office in another state. Professional types of services, once again, not to get into the weeds on that overall, but you can see overall, if you look at the bottom of that page, there's been a bit of an uptick, a slight uptick, about 7%. And quite frankly, medical inflation right now is running anywhere from 8 to 10%. So that gives you a pretty good idea. You guys are right there in line with where medical inflation would be considered to be. Top professional providers, just giving you an idea of where those are at. The majority of those, as you would imagine, are in Buffalo and in Sheridan, with a few running over to Gillette. And I would say we have many other pages here that we will leave with you to have some evening reading if you would like, if you would care. But what I would tell you is overall, the plan is running well. We will keep tabs on the uptick that occurred in December. We believe it is related to the cancer situation in particular, which we don't view at this point to be long-term ongoing. But we will keep tabs on that. And once again, so far so good, running at 69% with a pretty small list of spec claimants. So I think that that is all that we had for today. Are there any questions for us? Anything you would like us to take you through in greater detail?
Commissioners or Madam Clerk, questions for our benefit folks?
I have one, but I see it already out. I found my answer on
perfect.
The sheet, so I'm good there.
Okay, great, great. Any questions? You all know hopefully how to reach us, and please feel free to, don't hesitate. Give us a call anytime, and we can run through things in greater detail.
And I think as we come back next time, I'll probably ask for a little bit of time to talk about the alternative funding, how that's going to look in the plan design, what the estimated impact and savings is going to be for Johnson County's healthcare plan. It'll bring in a nice savings for you guys. We want you to understand how that will work through in the plan and then fare it back out again, because it's a pathway that has... we've done with a lot of our other groups, and it's been very successful. And it's taken me 3 years to get La Crosse to let us do that. We've done three groups that we trial studied from the first of the year, and that's implemented very successfully. So
we have a larger entity to the north up in Sheridan. Once again, a larger entity, so that wouldn't be expected here, but they saved in the first year alone to the tune of almost $1 million, $800,000 in prescription claims. So,
yeah.
Should have a nice impact.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
What's our insurance going to do this year? Is it going to remain the same, or is it going to go up?
Great question. So, as you recall, with your size group, we've had a couple of bumpy years. If I look at just kind of taking a snapshot from memory over the last 8 years or so, and we've had a number of years also that we've been able to come in with some nice decreases, it's too early to say at this point, but what I would tell you is if everything continued to track where it's currently tracking at about that 69 or 70% with low utilization on the spec side of things, you could expect a very competitive renewal. I would leave it at that. It should look really nice, barring any changes.
Yeah.
So.
And if we're able to capture, I don't know, $125,000 to $150,000 on the drug side of it without having the members lose that medication, then that's just more money that we'll be able to put back in, and you guys save for that bad year.
All right. Thanks again. Appreciate your time.
And I would just remind the clerk and our new commissioner that there's a lot of health information privacy contained in this report, so please understand that as you handle it, and that it is not a public document. So, yes.
Thank you.
All right, we have the annual letter from our coroner to appoint his deputies, so I would entertain a motion to appoint as deputy coroners Dave Harness, Shane Trader, Ken Richardson, Kelly Buckingham, Shane Greet, Josh Keegan, and Jill Wright.
So moved.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to make those appointments as the deputy coroners. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I'd like to welcome up Road and Bridge, who have a couple of resolutions for, I believe, CMAQ.
Actually, a couple of resolutions for fairgrounds.
Even better.
And do you have a copy of those?
I do, 695 and 696. So.
Basically, to get into this, this is just some more of our road mitigation project that we've been working on for the last 8-10 years. Is what we're doing here is the main road into the fairgrounds was never established as a county road. It just has a right-of-way that goes in there to the fairgrounds. And then Cowboy Trail, let's see, make sure I'm being right. And Cowboy Trail is the one that's the further north that's never been designated as a county road either. So basically is what we're doing is we're cleaning up that, and then the new road that we build in off King Lane and McKinley Street by the fairgrounds, that includes that in. So basically is all this is kind of a paper shuffle to put these roads, to designate them as county roads and put them into the county road system. Everything that's on the ground stays the same. As you come in off North Main Street down the main road into the fairgrounds, that's all a 66-foot easement that'll go through. Then that'll carry through and go through the King property down to McKinley Street. On the other end, on Cowboy Trail, that is actually a 50-foot easement, and that was something that was done with landowners in the fairgrounds years and years ago. And the other benefit of by doing this is then we can use like county road fund monies on those pieces of road and so forth. So. That's kind of the reason. It's just kind of a cleanup type deal. So there's.
Go ahead and read in resolution 695 and 696. And after we deal with those for our new commissioner, maybe we'll talk a little bit about where you guys are presently working in our road record remediation and how it works and where we've cleaned up in the past and where we're looking in the future. So. Forest Commissioners is Resolution 695, whereas the Board of County Commissioners of Johnson County has decided it would be in the public interest to establish a road to be known as Cowboy Trail, County Road Number 309, following the alignment of existing access road from North Main Street to the Johnson County Fairgrounds, and whereas the Board of Johnson County Commissioners has decided to establish the existing alignment as shown on the plat entitled Fairgrounds Access Road dated 10/11/2022. On file with the County Commissioners as the new alignment for County Road Survey 309. Said plat being available for public viewing at the Johnson County Courthouse. And whereas the Board of County Commissioners hereby orders that a notice conveying the intent of the resolution be published in the Buffalo Bulletin, the newspaper of general circulation in Johnson County for 3 consecutive weeks. The Board further orders that the notice of intent be mailed to all affected landowners along the length of proposed County Road Survey 309 pursuant to Wyoming Statute 24-3-110. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of County Commissioners of Johnson County, Wyoming, intend to carry out the actions outlined above at the Commissioners' meeting to be held at Johnson County Courthouse on April 4, 2023 at 9:05 a.m. Resolved this 7th day of February 2023. That is Resolution 695. Resolution 696. Whereas the Board of County Commissioners of Johnson County, Wyoming has decided it would be public interest to establish a road to be known as Fairgrounds Road, County Road Number 308, following the alignment of an existing road access road from Main Street to the Johnson County Fairgrounds, and continuing south to King Lane, McKinley Street, and whereas Board of County Commissioners has decided to establish the assisting alignment as shown on the plat title Fairgrounds Access Road, dated 10-11 of 2022, on file with the County Commissioners at the new alignment of County Road Survey 308, said plat being available for public viewing in the Johnson County Courthouse, and whereas the Board of County Commissioners hereby orders that a notice conveying the intent of this resolution be published in the Buffalo Bulletin, a newspaper of general circulation in Johnson County, for 3 consecutive weeks. The Board further orders that this notice of intent be mailed to all affected landowners along the length of the proposed County Road Survey 308, pursuant to Wyoming Statute 24-3-110. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Board of County Commissioners of Johnson County, Wyoming, intend to carry out these actions outlined above at the Commissioners' meeting to be held at Johnson County Courthouse on April 4th, 2023, at 9:10 a.m. Resolved the 7th day of February, 2023. Commissioners, there are the resolutions. Is there a motion to approve them? And we can open up discussion and questions on this process.
Make a motion to approve resolution 695 and resolution number 696.
There is a motion. Is there a second?
A second.
It's been moved and seconded. Scott, you just want to kind of give a top level of the road record remediation project, where we work, where we're headed, and then we can answer specific questions on these two roads that you haven't already covered.
Okay, perfect. This project started out several years ago. Actually, it's been about 10 years ago. We started out with a YDOT planning grant to go back in and look at our road records. Of course, Johnson County, when it was first formed as a county, was a lot bigger. When we went from a territory to a county, we have a lot of other counties. We took part of, like, Bighorn County, a good portion of Sheridan County, and so forth. So as what this project did is we went in and we looked at all of our road records and so forth, and we found any loopholes or so forth where a road doesn't exactly lay where the survey shows the road. So there's a lot of that. Is what you've seen is as they built roads. A good example is one we're working on temporary. When you come to a natural barrier or something, you went to the landowner, you shook his hand, you agreed upon something, and you built the road around, and that was never recorded. So what this project does is goes back in, we've cleaned up a lot of our road records. We've pretty much concentrated on all the ones around town locally that we knew that we were going to have growth impacts and so forth on, so like Rock Creek, TW, Klondike, Clear Creek, all those that we did major projects and stuff on. And when we go to do those projects, and that's just one step, that we're that much further ahead to do those projects. So it's a huge undertaking when you're looking at 500 plus miles of road. So we've been at it for a long time. Currently, we're working on, like I said, Tipperary is a big one right now, and it's a pretty messy one. So any questions there?
Questions on the road record remediation effort, or these two roads in particular?
On that King property, on that road there, how far back does that go before it turns into...
Actually, where the road comes out now, where we turn in there, right there at the corner of the property where Simon's owns that, I guess, now. Right there, actually, from South Bypass, or North Bypass, down to there in front of the fire department is McKinley Street. And then you have where we're turning off is King Lane, and King Lane basically goes over there until you cross the creek. So the county only has like 250, 300 feet of a county road, and then it goes back into a YDOT right away that takes in that box culvert that's in French Creek, goes underneath the interstate, and then that frontage road that goes up the other side. That's kind of a messy little deal in there. I pretty much, from North Bypass down, I pretty much maintain that. That's one of those deals that I haul enough water out of there. We have our water load out there, and then, of course, I pile that wrap material and stuff there. So I usually just kind of take care of that just as a good neighbor. So, yeah, that's what we find. We find a lot of that.
So 100 to 200 feet this and that.
Huh? Yeah. Pretty short little piece. And I don't know really what you... Until it's developed, it probably should just go to the city in the future. But some of the ones that we have worked on is like Cemetery Road. Of course, that used to be a county road. That had kind of a funny agreement on it when it was first built. It was built, and it was a shared deal between the city and the county, and they built it, and then the city was supposed to take it, and we were supposed to help do the maintenance on it. Well, we did the maintenance for years, and then we finally got that shifted to back to city ownership. The other one that we've really been working on and kicking around a lot is Klondike. Klondike really needs to go to the city, and then Hilltop Drive is another one that's, I mean, it's all city around it and so forth. And actually, I think if you look by state statute, if it's encumbered in the city limits, and then that's their infrastructure. But that's one that we've been prodding towards to get done. So.
Maybe if they post our 45-mile-an-hour speed limit signs on the county roads, they'd more.
And that is there is a little bit of a joke to that, because you can probably remember, Bob, and you guys might be able, in the 70s, Klondike Road used to be on over, kind of where the alley comes down, and that's where the bridge went into the park. Well, when they moved that over, there was a lot of complaints from the public how they were going to get up that hill in the wintertime. And there is actually a resolution, yes, on record saying that in the wintertime you can get a little bit of run at the hill. So.
So.
Good to know. I used that when I was 16. Bob.
Yeah.
I don't think you can get a reach back on that. We can try. All right. Any additional questions for Road and Bridge before I open up to public comment on Resolution 695 and 696? Is there public comment on Resolution 695 or 696? And also entertain any just general questions from the press or public as well. Public comment. Hearing none, I'm going to go ahead and close public comment. Commissioners, any further discussion on Resolution 695 or 696?
No.
Hearing none. All those in favor of Resolution 695 and 696, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
The only thing I have is I'll have Ashley work with Jody to get those letters put together. Usually those letters come from you guys, so we'll get those. We've got a list of landowners there that'll all have to be notified in writing, and we'll get those put together and get them out. And then, of course, we got to advertise that for 3 consecutive weeks. So hopefully it's a quick little cleanup. So. Perfect.
Great. Any other fitting issues that you want to bring up while you're here today?
Not that I know of.
Well, we just want to thank your crew for continued work to keep the roads open and the bus routes going. And, it's been a fun winter.
Yeah, actually, they a couple blades and 3 plow trucks out this morning. So you look outside, you think. But wind. So.
Yeah.
So. Good deal.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Waller, you are next with your boundary line adjustments. Shadwick with you, would you like to bring him up as well?
I got a message from Kristen that said she had a conflict, so.
Okay.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Good morning.
Don't worry about it. Is it turned on?
Okay. This is just a boundary line adjustment. It's pretty straightforward, Mr. Chairman. It's kind of a complicated one, but it's a typical boundary line adjustment between 2 landowners. I provided a couple of maps, hopefully, that Jody had given you guys, and I put 2 of them together. One was just kind of trying to document in time 1994 aerial compared to 2022 aerial. So you can kind of see the increase in houses in the area. So back in the 1970s, a lot of this parcel was all one intact property. They had an easement getting across to Cloud Peak Drive. There's a zigzag, and that's kind of where our boundary line. So I did some color coding so you guys just kind of see this. We have basically a traveled way that you would actually drive to get into the properties, and then there's the legal easement that's of record, and they're not the same. The legal easement follows the property lines that divides the two properties between the Heitmans and the Bennett parcels. And that road appears to be that it's always been in that same spot, and they just didn't build the road in the right spot, probably. There's that creek that runs through there. My guess is they went to the narrower spot where they could get the culverts and then just kind of matched it as close as they could. So this adjustment involves the Heitmans and the Bennett family. There are three parcels that are moving or going to be moving back and forth. It's parcel A, B, and C. In the affidavit and the attached documents, those are all the descriptions for the parcels that would go back and forth. And again, these are just little tiny sliver triangle pieces. Ultimately, the goal will be to have the two properties identified on the survey follow the actual traveled center line of the road, and that would be the parcel division. This gets a little bit more complicated, and Craig has prepared everything at this point. The easements will need to be, you know, executed between all the parties, and the documents are all intact. Cleaning up the record, they want to have the boundary line adjustment affidavit recorded first and followed through, then those deeds transferring and cleaning up the parcels, and then the easements with all the parties. I think six easements is what I kind of figured would have to be swapped out and cleaned up.
Seven.
I have to get this one.
So a little, even a little more complicated, is there's actually a couple of access easements that align with the current boundary. There's also a water utility easement that nobody knows what it's for, or that there's any water lines that go in it. So those are going to be vacated, and the new ones are going to be prepared for where the existing road is.
The report that I gave the board just summarizes the two parcels involved in this boundary line adjustment, identified the deeds of the current record holders, and then the swapping back and forth between the two landowners for parcels A, B, and C. This is considered a subdivision by state statute, and then the legislature exempts out various types of divisions. We have, under state statute, the authority for some documentation on implementation and use of the exemption. With a boundary line adjustment, you have the situations where parcels transfer and you forget about a little sliver. So the statute requires a merge when you do boundary line adjustments, so no new parcels are created. And the documents that Craig provided to the affidavit included the descriptions for A, B, and C, and then at the back, the last two pages are parcel one and parcel two, and those are ultimately the clean descriptions that would be recorded as the final step showing the parcels intact. So there is quite a few deeds that have to be filed and recorded as this moves forward.
That'll dig up some more stuff.
Hope not.
Basically, your considerations, you know, this is subject to the county's regulations, Article 3, 3.2C, where we cleaned up our boundary line adjustment process and the county subdivision regulations. Planning and zoning, unless we have something really complicated, only gets involved in an exemption use on kind of a complicated or a questionable exemption. We just have the affidavit. There are no signatures for the governing body. We just ask it go through the motion and approval by the board, and then the landowners have to record the affidavit and the surveys descriptions. With the recommendation, you know, I would hear any public comments or concerns from the public this morning, and then approve the Mylar, which we brought over, and the affidavit. Again, there's no signatures. We're just moving to approve it through motion with the record, and then allow the landowner to go ahead and start swapping out deeds and clean it up. Is there any questions?
Commissioners, questions before we entertain a motion to approve the boundary line adjustment?
That seems pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm.
All right, is there a motion to approve the boundary line adjustment?
I'll make a motion to approve the boundary line adjustment.
Second.
There's a motion and a second, which would allow now for a time of public comment or discussion on this. Is there any public comment on the boundary line adjustment for the Benick and Heitman families? Any public comment? Public comment? Public comment. Hearing none. All those in favor of the boundary line adjustment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
I will, I have the original, so I will make sure this afternoon I'll get everything to Craig and get it recorded. I've talked to a couple different surveyors. I think we're going to see more and more of some of these more touchy little slivers in the future as people start looking at their properties from what was to what is. We do have the subdivision that Craig is working on before planning and zoning. It hasn't, the final plat hasn't been prepared yet, but it's coming soon, and there's slivers around that that are all getting accounted for, so the parcel is intact. So we'll start probably seeing a few of these as people get their stuff surveyed. So, thank you, Board.
Thank you.
Mr. Waller, any just quick updates that we need to be aware of in terms of upticks in requests for septic inspection, subdivisions? Give us the quick 10,000 foot update.
So it's been kind of quiet. I like the cold winter. Keeps people calmed down. Got a few complaints as far as some of the septic permits issues or... I would say probably people's living choices are, you know, being questioned. So right now I have two active complaints regarding sewage, but so far everything is really consistent with the state law and the state rules on sewage as well as the county rules. And it's just your holding tanks and outhouses. They are required to be permitted. A lot of people, oh, they didn't know. But it's 1972 was when they were required to be permitted. I'm also running into some contractors that are shocked when I let them know that, you know, if you go to replace your septic system and you put a new septic system in, that's subject to permitting as well. So I've got longtime contractors that are asking when did this happen. And 1972 is the date, so... And I think we just are continually moving forward to try and get people to understand what is happening. There's a couple houses that out at the lake under construction in the North Shore PUD, one for sure. So we're working through on what the actual septic system will be for that property. The subdivision file should have something in there, and I've yet to find it. So I'm working and coordinating with DEQ to make sure that the house's sewage system will basically end up with clean water going back into the ground, which is the goal where the scoria rock is. Several families moving out on Traving Road. Just going to continue to keep growing. And there's a few alarms out there that I want to talk to the road and bridge about. We do have a private school out there with, you know, probably 15 to 20 kids going to school. We also are having, you know, school children walking down the county road. I walked down a state highway 2.5 miles in Cheyenne to get to school when I was, you know, wee high. So I don't know how you address these issues with kids on the county road, because it used to be very typical when we would get to school. As this progresses forward, I'm just watching. I'm going to meet with another family this afternoon out there, hopefully early, before we get into the planning and zoning stuff this afternoon. Got some other areas that are seeing some development in the county. I think from a residential standpoint, we're going to see kind of, I don't want to say quiet down, but I don't know. We could go up or down. Who knows what will happen? The economy is not being very favorable right now, but that isn't deterring commercial and people wanting to do those kind of activities. There's a few things we've uncovered, or I've uncovered, I guess, my staff and myself, over the last couple of days and weeks regarding our sage-grouse core areas. So I'm delving into an executive order that, I don't know, probably once Barry gets back into the community, he and I are going to have to sit down and really hash out some questions on the sage-grouse executive order from 2019. I've found out that it's a regulatory document against the citizens. It doesn't apply to just oil and gas and federal and state. It's private lands as well. So I want to make sure I have wrapped my head around that. Planning and zoning, we'll be having a work session tonight at 6 o'clock. This is the third or fourth of our advertised work sessions that we decided to hold this winter, working on trying to hash out those goals of the land use plan. We will be reviewing some letters that we hope to send out to the elected appointed boards throughout the community, county and community, and then some questions to just kind of get some food for thought and some data from the elected and appointed leaders, trying to determine what's important to the community and what's our values. I expect the board to hopefully get that finalized this evening, and then as far as regular meeting is at 7, it's a really quiet agenda, so I'm hoping to cover a few other items that have come up and discovered, and then see how the board is feeling as far as finalizing that questionnaire survey and getting it sent out. So, any questions? Definitely, if you have time, come. And starting at 6, it's pretty laid back. Like I said, we've had a couple people from the city come, and the board is really just wanting to make sure what existed in 2005 is still kind of important today, and if not, then what is our values for the community so that we know how to proceed forward over the next 10, 20 years or so. No subdivisions have been submitted, but there was some talk about the major subdivision coming back in, the one off of North Main Street. I have not seen anything as of today, and once we do, it'll just be starting that process with the subdivision regulations again. And then the final thing is, I think everybody is definitely paying attention to, you know, the community and housing. And I don't like to single it out to just Johnson County or Buffalo. I think it's a statewide problem that we're going to start running into, on top of maybe even an Intermountain West problem. And I think we're just going to continue to keep growing. So I try to let people know, as you choose to move to Wyoming, they have to remember we're the smallest state, and you know, growth goes up from the smallest. So just, you know, I think we're going to see some growth, which we've all experienced. I think everybody in this room has seen the growth over our lifetimes, and we would all like to say it was small like it was when we were in high school. So, any questions? All right, thank you for that.
So, commissioners, next on our agenda is some game and fish items. Jody, looks like there's a Meixel Pots maintenance. Is that a maintenance agreement? What exactly?
That is, yes.
Okay, so let's bring Scott back up. I believe this is the annual agreement,
yes,
for maintenance of Meixel Pots.
Yes, this is just it's the same agreement we've done for a bunch of years. It's for 3 years. It's for the docks at the Meixel Pots recreation area, and then also we take care of the restroom at the monument. We do a little mowing up there and so forth, just basic maintenance. They do all the major maintenance, whether stuff needs to be done to the docks and so forth. There is a little clause in there that we do a little bit of road maintenance at the monument and stuff. We actually renegotiated the dollar amount of this contract this time, and we got another, I think over the 3 years it's about 7%, and I don't have those numbers of what the total contract with me or anything, but yeah, that definitely
went up. It's in the ballpark of, I think it's like $4,800 a year, I think, to do that for them.
Mr. Ruby, have you had a chance to review this contract for Road and Bridge?
Just this morning as I arrived here and had a chance to look at my package. But not beyond that, this is the first that I've seen of it. However, as Scott said, this is the contract we've been doing. The difference is the dollar amount. So it appears dollar amount is $19,400. Is that on page one? Is that correct?
Yep. Yep, that's for the three total for the 3 years. Not to succeed that.
So I think Scott's done a good job of making sure we comply with the contract in the past. I don't think you'll have any issues complying with it now, and so I think it's fair to go ahead and sign it.
Commissioners, do you have questions on the Mikesell Pots portion of Lake DeSmit and how this contract works, the services that we provide? This has been a long-term relationship that I think has benefited the public greatly. Maybe almost starting to be overused. To like stop telling people to come and recreate at Lake DeSmit.
I have a question.
Basically, is what goes on with the Michael Parks portion of it is we launch those docks in the spring. Then, as the water level of that lake changes, whether it rises or lowers, then we readjust them. And then, right before it freezes up, we pull them out. That portion's pretty minimal. And then, like I said, the portion at the monument, we just run up there usually 2 to 3 times a week and clean the restroom, and then, like I said, some mowing. And we take another little extra step there. We do put a garbage dumpster up there. Just it helps us out a little bit on what we're picking up and so forth. Hopefully, if there's some place to put it, they'll put it there. So, but it's a pretty smooth, like I said. The road contract to blade that road is usually for twice a year. It gets bladed quite a bit more than that, just for the simple fact I haul a lot of water out of that in the summertime for road use and stuff. So that's how we kind of got roped into it in the beginning, is because I was blading it anyway, just because I used it so much to haul water and stuff. So it's been a good agreement. Is a good agreement.
So I'd entertain a motion to approve the maintenance contract with Johnson County Road and Bridge and the Wyoming Game and Fish Department.
So moved.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We've got a motion and a second, which would allow us to hear from the public on this. Is there any public comment on the Mikes and Pots or monument maintenance? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Mr. Ruby, at this time, is there any update you can give the commissioners on either the settlement agreement with Mr. Moreland or the purchase agreement on the north end?
So the updates that I would have for the commission is I've been working with Moreland's counsel to make sure that we get the wording right on the documents that we want to have. It was myself and Barry, we talked about the process of wanting them to draft it so then we can review and approve as opposed to us do the drafting. And so that's as we worked out a few things, we actually are filing today. Something vacating the trial is set for March, and so that will be done. And just a matter of getting the settlement finalized, completed, and then executing the stuff that we need for that should go pretty quickly. As far as the land purchase on the north side of the lake, that is, I've had a second discussion with the landowner, wanting to get, have not received yet, but want to receive from that individual whatever deliverables he is hoping to have and the things that we talked about. And I've actually spoken to Jim Waller about platting out what the 5 acres would look like and kind of getting a plan on those sorts of things. Mr. Waller has also brought to my attention various other issues that we need to consider as we go forward. And so those are things that we're in process of doing right now as well. So there's a lot going on, but nothing is moving extensively. Obviously, I think all the parts are in place, and once we get those things all finalized, I don't think that it'll take a long time. My next step is to contact the irrigation district and make sure that we don't have any issues there, which I don't anticipate.
All right, and at the Lake Smith Advisory Board meeting, they let us know that they're, I believe, on the 15th of February is the Lighter Ditches next meeting. Mr. Fenema is the representative of the Lighter Ditch Board that sits on the Lake Smith Advisory Board and has been aware of this as it's moved through the process. And so I think we'll have a pretty good results when we have that discussion with them on the 15th about the realignment of that ditch. So
I appreciate that. I was not aware of when the date for the meeting is, so I'll be at the meeting.
All right. Anything else on that, Tucker, as we try to get that buttoned up and so we can then present everything to the public as a settlement?
No. So, like I say, part of the reason that things are moving slow is I want to make sure that we have our settlement figured out before we proceed on any other issues, because that is, in my mind, an important part to get that done before we have other stuff. We are making movements to shore up and make sure that once we have the settlement, we can move quickly on the other stuff, and I have no indication that we're going to have any issues. I mean, there probably will be some, but I don't have any indication. Once again, we checked back with the landowner to make sure that the agreement that we have previously put in place is still working out. And I think the meeting I had just a couple weeks ago, and I've not received the list of deliverables that the hope is there. I'll check in with him again this week to make sure that he hasn't forgotten. I know it's a busy time for him as well, and so that's part of what's going on too.
Commissioners, any questions for the county attorney's office or the game and fish action at their meeting on the 31st? All right, moving on. Looks like we've got some catering permits. Clerk, looks like you've got a request from the Cowboy Saloon for the Buffalo FFA Alumni Oyster Ball for February 18th at the Johnson County Fairgrounds. Is everything in order? Has the fees been paid? And
yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Is there a motion to approve the catering permit for the Cowboy Saloon for the Buffalo FFA Alumni Oyster Ball at the Johnson County Fairgrounds on February 18th, 2023?
I'll make the motion.
Second. Been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And then, commissioners, we do have one catering permit that we actually need to approve retroactively. We had initially approved a catering permit for Taylor's Invasion Bar to cater the Johnson County Fairgrounds Foundation event that was the 28th. Fortunately, the highways were closed and Amanda could not get up to Buffalo to cater that event. The Fairgrounds Foundation was able to get the Cattle Guard Steakhouse to agree to serve as the caterer for that. That was on a Saturday morning, and obviously they couldn't get in and pay the fee until the following Monday. And so, Madam Clerk, you have the paperwork here. Did they pay the fee?
Yes, sir.
So I need a motion to approve retroactively the Cattle Guard Steakhouse's catering permit for the Johnson County Fairgrounds Foundation event on January
28th,
2023.
So moved.
Got a motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. I'd like to welcome up representatives of the Powder Pass Nordic Ski Club to share their concerns about some Forest Service dealings. And if Mr. Cope is going to join you, please come out. He's moral support.
Good
morning, Charlotte. How are you?
Good morning. I am doing well. How are you? My name is Charlotte Darling, and I am here on behalf of Powder Pass Nordic Club. We are a small, all-volunteer nonprofit. Our main activities are maintaining and grooming the ski trails at the Pole Creek Nordic area on the mountain. I'm not sure if you all are aware, but we recently became aware of a Forest Service plan, the Pole Creek Vegetation Management Project, I believe is what they're calling it. And it's a 37,000 acre, I believe, plan to do clear cutting and lodgepole, some pre-commercial thinning activities and things like this on a pretty large area. I think you guys have some maps that they've provided and then that we kind of put together ourselves. But our main concern is that a whole bunch of their treatments, particularly clear cutting, are planned right in the Pole Creek Nordic area, where we have about 12 miles of groomed ski trails. And if this proposal goes through as planned, it's basically going to destroy our ability to maintain those trails and for that area to hold snow. If you've ever been up there near the highway camp, it can get a little windy all the time, but especially in the winter. And with the loss of tree cover, the wind would just blow basically all the snow away and drift it in such a way that it would just, even what stayed on site would be really hard for us to groom. So there's a comment period open on this until February 21st. And our main ask of you all as our representatives would be to just request that the Nordic area be removed from the project. And it's a really large project, so there might be other issues as well. There's a lot of elk habitat that's probably going to be impacted. So, but our main concern is that the Pole Creek area has had a lot of public investment. We've had about $150,000 in financial contributions from the Johnson County Recreation District, the Tourism Association, as well as private donations over the last 10 years for our equipment, and then almost that much as well in volunteer labor to maintain those trails. And it's kind of the only area that this is activities even available in the county. So that's basically why we're here today. There's more kind of our talking points and stuff we shared with you all as well. And one of our big concerns was that the Forest Service at the public meeting they held on the 26th of January said they weren't really going to do any socioeconomic analysis of this project. And that concerned us because tourism is the second largest industry in the state and it's growing. I even saw a YouTube ad this morning when I was on the computer advertising that Wyoming's second largest industry is tourism. So we do get a lot of people from out of state and out of county that use those trails and come through town to buy gas, rent skis at Sports Lure, and various other things. So our main issue is to try to get that area taken out of the proposal, as well as hopefully designate it as a winter sports area. We were surprised. We have a cost share agreement with the Forest Service to maintain these trails, and we have a liaison who mentioned this project was coming up at one of our meetings, and then all of a sudden it was halfway through the comment period and we're going, you guys are going to clear cut like all of our ski trails? I mean, this is like a 15 to 20 year proposal, but we were pretty surprised and kind of frustrated because we've put a lot of work into these trails and a lot of people in the community use them. So we just ask that y'all maybe consider commenting or ask for more information on that from them.
Seems like that's one of the Forest Service favorite things is to tell you they'll do something and then make up a plan to do something else.
Yeah, and you know, they've talked about, well, maybe there's mitigation and things like that, but you know, buffering these trails, but we kind of just want to say, let's just leave that whole area out. It's about 1,000 acres out of like 37,000 acres they want to treat. So it really wouldn't impact their project that greatly, I don't think, to take that out. And we ran some numbers, and depending on which ones you use, it'd be about 3 to 5% difference in their harvestable timber versus like 100% loss of this resource that benefits everybody's mental and physical health, especially in the winter when it's nice to get out and ski, or and even hike, you know, in the summertime skiing, hiking. There's a lot of hunters that use that area too. So that was kind of our club's main concern, but like I said, hopefully you guys are aware of the bigger project because it's got a pretty big area they're covering. So yeah, I think that's kind of my main point. So if you have any questions.
I'll bring it up with the Big Horn Mountain Coalition. See what we can see how much input we can get.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Yeah, and like I said, there's some of our other kind of, because we're planning to prepare and submit comments as a club, and also, you know, we have about 300 people on our email list and hoping to have them offer their input as well and make comments to the Forest Service. So,
Commissioner Perry is our liaison to the Forest Service. I know I have my opinions on just how important this recreation area is, but is this something that you would like to see this commission use our cooperating agency status to provide comment and utilize the county's natural resource plan to share with the Forest Service how this would adversely impact our tourism economy? Don't you think?
Yeah.
Thank
so,
you.
Could we maybe get a motion to authorize the chair to send a letter to the Forest Service for the comment period?
I'd like to make a motion to have the chairman draft a letter to the Forest Service to exclude Polk Creek Nordic Trail from the clear cut program.
I like that motion. Is there a second for that motion?
Second, though.
Right. We have a motion and a second for the county commissioners to use their cooperating agency status and cooperate on the forest plan for Polk Creek vegetative management. Is there any discussion on that or public comments?
I would just throw in that.
If we could ask you to please stand, introduce yourself so that the clerk can put your public comments into the record.
Critical Johnson County citizen. But I wouldn't want out in the forest plan, it says that the Forest Service is to provide coordination to the county commissioners for tourism and recreation opportunities. So I think you're right on track to let them know how you feel about that.
Could you repeat your name, sir?
Craig Cope, COPE.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further public comment? Public comment? Jody, please go ahead.
So Jody Sowers with the Johnson County Tourism Association, and after being down in Cheyenne, I think that the Polk Creek is a huge draw in the winter, which is when we need the funds. So I will talk to the rest of the board and see if we can also do some kind of a letter or something to get the word out too. So.
Mr. Cope would add that the deadline is February 21st.
Any further public comment? Hearing none, there is a motion before you, commissioners. All those in favor of sending a letter to the Forest Service, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Charlotte, anything else you'd like to update us on?
I don't think so. I appreciate your support. And we do have our Pole Creek Challenge, which is our annual fundraiser race, if you guys want to come ski or watch. It's on the 25th of February on Saturday. It's usually actually earlier in February, but we've changed it because last year we actually had to cancel because there wasn't enough snow, even with all the trees. but hopefully that was a one-time deal. So, yeah. I encourage you to check out our website too, or share with your friends, because it's fun. Snowshoeing as well is a little more beginner friendly, I think. So, yeah. Oh.
Be part of the county's wellness plan.
Yeah, it's free.
All right, commissioners, we have a carryover item from our meeting in January. and that is we have three boards that we need to finalize some appointments to. The first was the vacancy on the Johnson County Recycle Center Board. It looks like we have two letters of interest. So I'm going to defer to our liaison to the Recycling Center Board to share their thoughts.
Let's see. I haven't read these two reports yet. Let me look.
So we have letter pictures from Rachel Waita and from Robin Romine.
Mm-hmm. How many positions do we have? Just one. I would defer to the secretary treasurer of the recycling center and see what their advice is on this.
I don't know either. My name's Dave Smith. I'm on the board of the recycling. I'm the treasurer. I don't know either individual that has submitted the letter, so I really probably can't comment on it. You know, what I would say about the recycling board is we need worker bees on the board, not show up once a month. You know, we're a little bit different operation than a lot of what the county has. You know, it's really up to the board to manage this business, not just approve things once a month. We don't have the staff or the probably the horsepower to really do some of that, and so that's a lot of the role of the board. So as you consider appointments, I would encourage you to look for people that have the time to actually do some work. For me, it's an enjoyment. I'm retired. I got lots of time. That's why I wanted to get involved. But it's clear after 2 years on there that, you know, we could use a little more professional type help to improve the way the centers run and that type of thing. So, but I don't know either of those two individuals.
I would like to thank Dave for his participation on this board. He's made some significant changes that have really moved the recycling center into a less expensive operation than it has been in the past. Both of these applications look good to me, but I wonder if maybe I should interview these two people and see which one might be the better candidate. Taking one of them until our next meeting.
Okay, we're scheduled to meet on the 21st of this month, so do you think you can have that done by then?
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, we'll go ahead and set that one aside. Next was the Solid Waste District. It looks like we have one interested candidate, David W. Smith, and he actually served on the recycle board, so maybe we'll get some synergy between the two centers. So,
who's going on? David Ivey.
This is the I believe.
Oh, the KC.
The seat that KC has left open.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll make a motion to appoint David Smith to this board. I think that he has really proven his worth.
Got a motion and a second to approve Dave Smith to the Johnson County Solid Waste District Board. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor? All those in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Next up, Harold Gerard Park Board. Looks like we do have a letter from Mr. Dave Straub asking to be reappointed to the Harold Gerard Park Board.
after reading this lengthy comment on here, I think I move to put Dave Straub on to the book.
I've got a motion to reappoint Dave Straub. Is there a second?
I'll have to have a half hour to read this. I'll second that.
I've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of reappointing Dave Straub to the Herald Gerard Park Board, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, last one. This was also a carryover. Tyler Benton had asked to be reappointed to the Johnson County Weed and Pest Board. This is a unique special district in that to be nominated, you have to have a petition signed by landowners within that weed and pest district. Tyler's paperwork was not in prior to our previous meeting, so we were not able to act on it. We've now got his petition with 10 landowners within that district. So, commissioners, what's your pleasure on reappointing Tyler Benton to the Johnson County Weed and Pest Control District?
I would like to reappoint Tyler Benton to the, move we reappoint Tyler Benton to the Weed and Pest District.
Got a motion?
Second.
And a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of reappointing Tyler Benton to the Johnson County Weed and Pest District, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Jody, at this point, are there any other board appointments that you need us to act on?
Not today.
Okay, and I do believe maybe we've got some March appointments forthcoming.
Yes.
What about the JCC Tourism Board?
That is a good question, and that's a follow-on discussion. Commissioner Perry, have you and Councilman Madden kind of come to a decision on the rewrite of those bylaws, and if you wanted the board to remain at the current 9-member, if you were planning to propose it to be stepped down to 7 or to 5?
Mike and I had a meeting with Jody and the chairman.
John Fortner.
We expressed our grievances with the tourism board, and I think that we're kind of all on the same page now, and they expressed an interest in maintaining the 9 members because each member is given assignments in their quest to create more tourism. I said that I would bow out of wanting to change the board members if they would be sure that they got an
administrative
assistant. Thank you.
Yes.
And so that being said, I would say that I think that we should leave them be and let them conduct their business. And
we have approved the person, we just have not addressed her yet. I'm hoping that's later today.
But
we have a board, we've agreed to go ahead and hire someone.
Okay, and they're going to work directly with the Chamber of Commerce?
The Chamber is saying they do not have space for us in the Chamber. So I've looked at some other options, and I'm still working on that.
Okay. I just want to be sure that you had included the Chamber in your conversation.
Yep, absolutely.
We want both organizations to succeed. Okay, I would like to, I don't know if it would need to be in a motion form or not, but if it does need to be in a motion form, I'd say that make a motion to leave the Johnson County Tourism Board at the same number at its present level and not revise their bylaws.
Okay. Okay, I've got a motion and a second on the JCTA. Is there any public comments or discussion on leaving the board and the bylaws as is? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman?
I was coming right to that. Jody, so then, Chris Repair, we have one vacancy then, and you do have a letter of interest from Katie Giles with the TA Ranch asking to be appointed to the vacant county seat that we had set aside until that decision on the board composition was made. So, Commissioner Perry, would you like to make that appointment today, or do you want to re-advertise the vacancy?
No, I think that I would like, this was part of our discussion at the meeting that Mike and I had with John and Jody, and they expressed an interest in having Katie Giles be on the board. They actually have her on their stationery as being a member of this. I would like to appoint Katie Giles to the County Board of Directors.
Okay, there is a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
I've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of appointing Katie Giles to a term of 2 years on the Johnson County Tourism Board, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Any further discussion on board appointments?
I hope not.
And Jody, for the benefit of the public, would you announce the upcoming their March vacancies on some boards?
I believe there are three vacancies open for Lake District Advisory Board.
Okay. And can you remember off the top of your head what those three interest areas are?
I'm sorry, I do not.
Okay. Well, we will get that published on the county webpage as well as in all of the various publications to advertise those three vacancies, and those have specific interest groups that they have to represent. All right, any further discussion on board appointments? All right, commissioners, the next item before you, and it's actually a good segue from Mr. Waller's comments on sage grouse. As you know, Johnson County has asked to be a cooperator with the State of Wyoming's Bureau of Land Management Office for the revisions to the Greater Sage-Grouse Management Plan. And so before you, we have a memorandum of understanding with the County Commissioners Association and the counties of Bighorn, Campbell, Carbon, Converse, Crook, Fremont, Hot Springs, Johnson, Lincoln, Natrona, Niobrara Park, Sheridan, Sublette, Sweetwater, Uinta, Washakie, and Weston counties to work together as a collective group to do this. And I'm not going to read the entire memorandum of understanding. But by doing this, commissioners, this will allow the counties to speak with one voice. It will allow the County Commissioners Association and our natural resource attorney, Mr. Micah Christensen, to speak on behalf of the counties to the Bureau of Land Management. And it also then allows us to hire an outside consultant to help with the coordination of all of our comments. You'll remember that typically when we do comments on plans, that usually falls squarely on my shoulders. And this is a huge undertaking with huge ramifications to our agriculture, tourism, oil and gas, basically anywhere that they say there could be a sage grouse. So I would welcome the help. This will be funded primarily out of the natural resource grant that we received from the governor. Federal Natural Resource Policy Account, NERPA, if you love the acronym, but there could be a small cost associated with that with the county that would help to fund the outside consultant. This could easily be covered within our budget, or we can even create a line item for it in the upcoming fiscal year budget. So my advice is that we go ahead and sign this memorandum of understanding, joining with the other counties rather than trying to do this effort on our own.
And I agree with that. This is one of those ongoing things that gets very time consuming, and even if it costs us some money, it's better than not an option.
No, it's, so I make a motion.
Second.
I've got a motion and a second to sign the memorandum of understanding with the Wyoming County Commissioners Association for the Greater Sage Grouse Plan Revisions. Is there any discussion? Mr. Waller.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make sure the board definitely understood. Our core area divides the county in half. Those are 2 mile radius circles around the Lex put together. We have a connectivity area that would connect basically in Tarrant County and ultimately up into the Montana areas. I think when you look at the maps inside of all the sage grouse information, we definitely want to be proactive. I recently did find out that private citizens that need to get a permit from the state of Wyoming are subject to that executive order. So if you have to get a permit for a water well from state engineer's office, it's painful right now from what I'm reading and understanding. That core area, you know, it runs through the whole center of the state of Wyoming. I kind of been playing around with trying to figure out how big it is compared to the square area of Wyoming, our county. Look at it from private land ownership. I don't know. I think we definitely want to be on board with the rest of the counties to look at this in whole. It's going to affect everything from subdivision development to, it is not just oil and gas, and it is not state or federal land. It's private land. They say in the executive order it doesn't apply to private lands. Not what we're hearing and finding out. So anybody that is definitely concerning, you know, I think you have to get the county on your side. And we are going to bring it up tonight just so the board knows with planning and zoning, because I just found out about it. I mean, I've known about this for years and years and years, but this is the first time I ever realized that it was a regulatory environment on the citizens.
Only if you disturb the sage grouse.
I would echo the same thing. As we use federal dollars, road projects and so forth, the hoops that we have to go through now, even if with our CMAQ, with our dust abatement, the new requirements and stuff could hinder whether Johnson County will be receiving those dollars to use on our roads. So I think this is a very important step, because it's not fun.
The last comment I'd offer is there's lots of references to the Takings Act under that executive order. I'm waiting until Barry gets back, because I think the county really needs to understand what is going on. So as you move forward with an agreement with the other communities and counties throughout Wyoming, I think we need to really think about what's happening and what's going on, because it's not just, you know, getting an air quality permit. You're subject to what's going on. And I deal with air quality questions all the time from anybody that wants to get a junkyard from YDOT. We also deal with air quality on, the list goes on. They come to the counties and ask for what the land use or permitting requirements are at the county level. There are right now 5 counties that have no zoning regulations, so this is just another layer of the government above us, and that's one of the topics that we're going to talk about tonight. So.
Any further discussion on the MOU? Hearing none, all those in favor of signing the Memorandum of Understanding, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Brings us now to a time of the vouchers. So, Madam Clerk, I have before me, looks like $375,890.67 for the January expenses, and that includes $184.24 in a prepay.
Sir.
Commissioners, did you have any questions for the clerk on any of the specific vouchers?
I make a motion to pay our vouchers. What's December?
This is the January.
January.
All right, I've got a motion to pay the January bills. Is there a second?
A second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We are far into February, Commissioner. All right. Brings us to a time of public comment. So is there any public comment that would like to be addressed to the commissioners?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think we overlooked approval for you to sign the Cowboy Bar retroactively for them to move their county license into the city.
Okay. Sorry about that. Which tab do you have that hidden under, Jody?
I have like a license. Just because the board is
front.
Okay. All right. Sorry about that. I thought that was going with her for the Oyster Vaults. I need a motion, commissioners, to approve Cowboy Saloon to move their license into the city of Buffalo. For looks like this is also retroactive.
Yes, it was.
Okay. So this would have been for their event at Bomarama Civic Center on the 13th of January, 2023.
So moved.
Okay, motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Is there any additional public comment? Public comment. All right, hearing none, I'm going to go ahead and close public comment. Madam Clerk, did you have additional business you needed the commissioners to transact today?
Oh, this time.
Jody, we took care of yours. Any additional business you need us to transact, sir? It's like we do have a request for executive session for personnel. I'm going to entertain a motion to go into that in just a second. A couple of announcements. Again, the Board of Health will meet in this chamber at 1 o'clock. And the Justice Center Joint Powers Board is at 1:30. Please attend the work session for the Planning and Zoning Commission at 6 o'clock or their regular meeting at 7 p.m. So with that, I'd entertain a motion to move into executive session pursuant to Wyoming statutes covering personnel.
So make the motion.
Got to move.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?